So I wanted to thank you all so much for having me here. It's great to be here, and good afternoon. I know this is kind of a rough time right after lunch, so I'll try to be interesting. today I'm going to talk a little bit about just some key points of media advocacy, a little bit of a very basic introduction, and I'm going to talk about it especially as it relates to two local campaigns in my home state of California around soda taxes and soda tax policies in the California cities of Richmond and El Monte. I have no relationships to declare. And I really want to start out, first of all, by acknowledging my co-authors and my colleagues at BMSG and saying a little bit about what it is that we do. For those of you unfamiliar with Berkeley Media Studies Group, we research how the news talks about different public health and social justice issues. And we also provide training and technical assistance to advocates and community groups who are interested in shaping and changing that media conversation. We're often asked, well, why the focus on the news? And I think the best answer is that, like everyone in public health, we're really concerned with creating and sustaining healthy communities, healthy cities and towns, healthy environments, for a more jargony term. And we feel that one of the best ways to do that is to reach the policy makers and the decision makers whose work affects and shapes those communities. And one of the ways to do that is through the news. And I'm going to start by just introducing a couple of key functions of the news as we talk about it that I think will help contextualize media advocacy a little bit. So the news really, it sets the agenda, right? It determines, you know, the water cooler talk, what we're thinking about and what we're not thinking about. And it also shapes the debate. It affects how we think about that, who's included in the stories, who's excluded, what solutions do we see as being on or off the table. Indeed, how do we learn about issues that we might not have any personal experience with? And the news doesn't just reach us as the general public, it also reaches those opinion leaders, those policymakers whose decisions shape those environments. Policymakers really view the news as a barometer of constituents' interest in a topic, as a marker of what solutions are acceptable or unacceptable, and also an indication of, it can also be just a way of that for them to learn about issues in the absence of public information, or personal information. So I think kind of understanding the news as it's these three functions kind of helps us understand what media advocacy is. It's really, media advocacy is about strategically using the news and other kinds of mass media to build support for and advance the public policies that build and sustain healthy environments. And it's an incremental process, and you'll definitely see that as we're talking through a couple of these examples, that it's a process of pieces and steps towards the final goal. So now that we know what media advocacy is, I'm just going to talk a little bit about how we put it into practice and how media advocates can organize their work. At BMSG, we talk about these layers of strategy, but I'm a person that thinks well in terms of questions and answers, so I'm going to talk about these different layers as a series of questions and how we answer them. And one of the things that my executive director, Lori Dorfman, who couldn't be here today, and some of you may be familiar with, always says, is you can't have a media strategy without an overall strategy. But you really can't have any of these without an overall strategy. So the overall strategy is what really answers those questions like, well, what's the problem? And what's the change that I want to see? What policy change do I need to make to see that? And who do I need to reach? And how do I mobilize the people that I need to mobilize to get to that target? Then we get to the media strategy, which answers the questions of, well, in that case, do I need the media at all to advance that change that I want to see? And if so, what kind of media? Is it the news? Is it anything else? If it's the news, well, when in the policymaking process will my news be most impactful? And then we reach down to more the message strategy, which gets to some of those nuts and bolts questions like, well, what does my target need to hear? And how do I make the case for that policy change? And finally, we get to the access strategy, the real nitty-gritty of, well, all right, in that case, how do I get in the news? How do I make my story newsworthy? And we're going to talk primarily today, as we refer to these examples, about kind of these lower two layers, the message strategy and the access strategy, because that's where a lot of our examples from Richmond and El Monte come. So a challenge that I think that we face, not only in dealing with media advocacy, but thinking about these layers of strategy, is the way that we all, oh, my wife got off, oh well, is the way that we often think about public health and social justice issues. And I'm sure it's not necessarily news to anyone in this room that there's a real tendency to think about health issues, for example, in the context of personal responsibility. What can people do or not do? What choices or changes do they need to make to be healthy or avoid ill health? And that's really important, but the flip side is that there's very limited conversation often about the institutions that shape the environments that give rise to health problems, but that also might have a role in solving them. When I say institutions, I'm talking, you know, government, schools, corporations, et cetera. And this is a pattern that we see reflected in the news a lot of times. You know, the news that we see, the media that we see about health and social justice issues usually really focuses on individual, I'm very proud of this animation, by the way, I'm sorry, I just had to say that, really focuses on individual choices and changes for children and their families and individuals, and that's a lot of the social marketing campaigns that we see also reinforce that message, that it's really about the changes that you make. And of course, those are critically important, but again, what's missing is the conversation about, for instance, the institutions that make and market unhealthy products to our children. For example, this is an image from the American Beverage Association's homepage. It's part of their corporate social responsibility campaign titled, somewhat paradoxically, Delivering Choices. So, you know, this is a frame and an imbalance that we see reinforced again and again and again, but there are tools that we have to reset this balance and shift that conversation a little bit so that we're thinking more about those institutions, those corporations, and their role in both shaping and solving our health problems. And I'm going to talk today, as I mentioned, just a little bit about two campaigns in two California cities of Richmond and El Monte. I don't know how many of you here are familiar with these two cities, but I'll just do a very brief overview. These are two commonly described as working class cities. Richmond is in Northern California near my hometown of Oakland, and El Monte is in Southern California near Los Angeles. And both of them have very large Latino and African American communities. And in 2012, concerned in part about rising obesity and other nutrition-related disease rates in those communities, local health advocates proposed soda taxes on the city ballots. And had those been voted in, they would have been the first soda taxes in the country to be decided by community residents. So as you might imagine, there were some folks who weren't super excited about this concept, primarily the beverage industry, who launched a $4 million counter tax ad campaign. Now, $4 million, just to put it in context, this is for two cities whose combined population is about 200,000. So this made it the most expensive campaign in either city's history. And perhaps not surprisingly, in November of 2012, both ballots were defeated by pretty wide margins. But these were precedent-setting campaigns, and they attracted attention from all over the country and the world. So we were really interested in knowing at BMSG, well, how did advocates use media advocacy? And how did opponents use their messages in the news? What lessons could we learn from these campaigns? Now, I'm a huge methods nerd, I have to tell you. So I could talk all day about what we did and what we found. I will spare you. But I do have a couple of copies of the memo we produced. We're working on a longer form. So if you're interested at all in this, please do feel free to see me afterward or grab my card and check our website. But in essence, our analysis of local and national news and some industry press in both English and Spanish taught us a couple of important lessons about, you know, the messages that were being used and things like that. But what I want to focus on here are just a few media advocacy highlights that show how advocates in Richmond and El Monte were using the news to shift that conversation, to make the case for their policy, but also reset that balance a little bit and bring the focus bring the news focus from just being on individuals drinking soda or not drinking soda and shifting the focus a little more to what the beverage industry was doing in their communities during the campaign and in general. So one of the things that we talk about that really helps make the case for a policy and that advocates used really effectively in Richmond and El Monte was social math. So this is a way of making big numbers, like the kind we encounter in our policy debates, really visible and meaningful. And of course, in the Richmond and El Monte campaigns, we had a great number to work with. We had $4 million. And what advocates did really effectively to make these numbers visible and meaningful and use them to make a case was they broke these down and they asked, well, these are advocates from the California Endowment who asked, well, if, what if Big Soda had instead spent their pile of cash to keep California kids healthy and active? What could they have done? And the answers included things like, well, they could have paid the $260 youth football league fee for almost 16,000 Richmond 12-year-olds to play football, even if their parents can't afford it. Or they could have delivered two boxes of organic vegetables to every Richmond and El Monte household. Or they could have brought water fountains to 1,100 California schools, 40% of which don't offer free water at lunch. So these numbers really helped make that, this example of social math really helped make that big $4 million number really concrete and visible, but also helped make the case not only for the value of investing in community health, but also really drew attention to what the soda industry's actions were doing or not doing for the health of the communities it was spending so much money in. Another example of a media advocacy tool that we see really effectively used are media bites. Now, these are the really quotable, memorable statements that appear in the news making the case for a policy. One of the key spokespeople, I don't know if any of you are familiar with Jeff Ritterman, but he's a Richmond City Councilman and a cardiologist of long standing at Richmond Kaiser. And he proposed the soda tax in Richmond, California, and he was probably its most visible advocate. He was out there everywhere. I'll talk about that in a minute. And he had some great statements he made, some great media bites, where he just effectively used the news in a really short but quotable way to make the case for his policy and shift the focus. So here he said, we have a legitimate grassroots-funded movement that cares about Richmond and wants to change it, while the soda industry has an AstroTurf-funded movement. So this is a really great example, again, of a memorable little quote that not only highlights the value of the policy that these local advocates are investing in and devoting their time to, but it also draws attention to the way the soda industry was using its massive money to create a campaign that, like AstroTurf, was artificial but designed to look real. Mark Bittman, who's not a local voice, but on whom I adore and whose blog I read probably more than I should, he also had some great media bites, including comparing tobacco to the added sugar of the 21st, or excuse me, comparing added sugar to the tobacco of the 21st century. Again, a really compelling little bite that not only builds on the legacy of tobacco control, but draws parallels between the actions of Big Soda and Big Tobacco. As I said, I'm a nerd about this kind of thing. I could go on all day, but I just want to close with a mention of getting attention, right? This is kind of one of the most important concepts in media advocacy. Russell Ciondra, who's the director of Tobacco Free New York, says that to gain the media's attention, it's not enough to just say something, you have to do something. And that can be really overwhelming when confronted with really well-organized and well-funded opposition, as was certainly the case in Richmond. These are just two examples of the kinds of billboards that blanketed the city of Richmond. There were also a campaign in El Monte, but and these were all over the city. This is some of what $4 million will buy you. And I think that it can be very daunting to try to come up against that and think, well, all right, how do I use the news to make, okay, I've gone to my 2-minute warning, so I gotta wrap this up. How can I use the news? How can I possibly compete with this? But Richmond and El Monte advocates did such a fantastic job of that, and I think that they provide a really nice lesson on the power of media and the power of media advocacy. Jeff Ritterman, again, was out in force with his, he carried around with him a little red wagon full of the 40 pounds of sugar that he said each Richmond child consumed every year just from sodas. So this was an incredibly compelling visual that became part of the media narrative about this story, underscoring the grassroots and community-led nature of the campaign for the to pass the soda taxes. Editorial pages are another way that advocates can even just get a foot in the door of making that change and getting that attention. Opinion spaces can include everything from letters to the editor and blogs all the way up to op-eds and editorials. And in Richmond and El Monte, 40% of the coverage, which is really an unprecedented amount, was just opinion coverage, just people making their voices heard. Now, admittedly, it wasn't all pro-soda tax, but still, it's an indication of the extent to which people were using that space and using the power of media. Advocates can use their authentic and lived experience as those affected by the health problems in our communities, as Dr. Lidia Tinajero-Deck, who I used to work with actually at Children's Hospital, did when she spoke again and again at community meetings, really drawing these powerful visual pictures of the impact of soda consumption and the related nutrition and nutrition-related disease on her community. So these are all just a couple of really compelling examples of people using the media to advocate and push for systems change, using the media advocacy strategies at their disposal, no matter how small they seem by comparison with massive industry funding. So, of course, I just need to close by mentioning that both policies were defeated in November of 2012, despite this work. But I think that that really kind of ends us on a powerful note and a kind of a positive and optimistic note for the future. And I promise I'll wrap this up. At VMSG, we often talk not about, it's kind of the journey, not the destination, but the metaphor that we use is about pebbles in the water. And the idea is that you throw a pebble into a stream. I'm from Eastern Washington originally, a lot of streams up there. And you launch a little pebble into the water and maybe it sinks and it doesn't stop the flow of water. But if you throw enough pebbles, they eventually build up and they form a bridge that you can walk across. And I think that there's a lesson there about public health advocacy and public policy and how some policies may not see that necessarily achieve the change that we want to see right away. They might get defeated on the ballot. But we're always throwing more pebbles, and we're always learning from the ones and building on top of the ones that we've thrown before. You know, tomorrow in Telluride, Colorado, there's going to be a vote on a soda tax that's based on some of the lessons learned from Richmond and El Monte. So I think that, you know, just in closing, thank you all so much for being here and being interested in learning about a tool that helps us throw those pebbles more effectively, throw bigger ones, take more steps, whatever metaphor you want to use, towards building stronger, more cohesive public health policy that lets us really walk across to the other side of healthy communities. Thank you so much.